guys, welcome back to another episode of the Coaching Confidence Podcast. My name is David Bertasol, and today I'm joined by a really special guest, a good friend of mine. He is a gym owner, owns one of the top training facilities here in London, City Athletic. Worked with some of the biggest brands in the fitness industry, including Fresh Fitness Food as an ambassador. What started his sporting career as a rugby player representing Oxford University in 5 varsity matches, which is very impressive. Most people don't really ever get the opportunity to do one before, unfortunately, getting injured and turning towards the gym, where he has been pretty bloody successful, not going to lie. national and European titles as an amateur bodybuilder before turning pro and winning 2 world championships with the WBFF. Gracing the covers of multiple magazines, fitness modeling, and growing his social media empire to over 1.5 million followers. Today, we are joined by Sean Stafford. How are you doing, mate?
Mate, you've done your homework. That's one hell of an introduction. It's almost like a eulogy at my funeral. It was very good, very in-depth.
It's amazing what you can find on the internet for someone that lives their life on the internet.
Do you know what? Like, I'm just surprised you didn't come up with... Someone asked me the other day if I was a 56-year-old female tennis player, because there is a 56-year-old female tennis player called Sean Stafford.
There is indeed, yeah. And it was initially quite confusing because I saw a picture of you.
Yeah.
And then you started talking about tennis. I was like, I'm pretty sure. Hasn't played tennis.
To be honest... She sounds a lot more successful than I have been in her chosen sport.
She's crushed it.
She's smashed it, yeah. At least she even won a Grand Slam.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, you kind of did win almost a Grand Slam. I mean, you've won 2 WBFF World Championships.
Yeah, that feels like an age ago. It was a very special time in my life. It was one of those times when you kind of transition between team sports, playing rugby and all that sort of stuff. And you go down into kind of like, what am I going to do next? And it just so happened to that physique sport and men's physique and fitness modeling was just kind of coming in, like creeping in. And then it would just happen to be a good time for me where I got in early and kind of grabbed it with both hands and cracked on with it. No, but it was a very special time and a lot of fun.
Dude, don't set yourself short. I mean, yes, you might have been there at the right time because men's physique as a component of bodybuilding it's not a very old category, let's say. Like, obviously, like, people will think back to Arnold Schwarzenegger time, like the golden age of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And it was not, there wasn't men's physique back then. When was the first year that category came into bodybuilding?
Probably 2011, 2012, 2011, 2010. It's only been about 10 years, but it's one of those things where because bodybuilding kind of evolved to such a level where they're all just so big now that you look at men's physique and some of the physiques that are on the men's physique stage, and they're almost the bodybuilding physiques of yesteryear. You look at Arnie's stats and he's 6'1" and 220 pounds. Whereas, you look at the stats on the guys today and they're 6'1" and 320 pounds or 350 pounds. And it's kind of like, you look at what we always sort of saw as a more classic physique. And that is kind of what is coming through the men's physique division.
Yeah. I mean, my personal opinion on it is that men's physique is a much more attractive physique. Like, I personally, this is my taste, others will differ, but I don't personally think that the guys that are that huge, that are like ridiculously big, that you see them and you're like, you don't look particularly human. Like, a lot of functions must be quite difficult for you to do. Like, in my opinion, that's not massively attractive. Whereas, someone who's like, small waist, massive V-shaped, kind of very symmetrical, very lean, almost looks athletic rather than just big. Like, to me, that's a little bit more aesthetically pleasing. But
I think you can kind of look at it from like the evolution of the male form from like, even if you take films example, like you look back at the 80s where you had Stallone and Schwarzenegger and all those guys who are larger than life, sort of big dudes. And now you kind of look at who's coming through and kind of that physique. And it is more of a functional physique. You got the Hemsworths, the Christian Bale and Batman. You know, the action heroes are much more realistic and almost natural now compared to what they were like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same in bodybuilding. Like, I think what people see and is more fashionable now is that more attainable physique, is that more functional physique, and it's just a bit more dialed down. I think the health benefits of being a bit smaller, not putting so much stress on your body and all that sort of stuff is probably one of the big factors. But also, what's attainable for the average guy and what is a realistic goal to have is probably a massive factor in it too.
Yeah, well, I mean, most people are not going to be ever able to achieve the body of a bodybuilder. Like, they're not going to put the time and the effort into it. And looking at someone who's doing men's physique, they'll be like, actually, that, like, in, you can look, obviously you won't look stage ready because that's a whole process in itself.
Yeah.
But you can look like relatively kind of close where you're like, yeah, I mean, I've got the same sort of general shape. You can get that V shape. You can get a tapered waist. You can have big shoulders. Like, in that is, you know, it is relatively achievable, but being huge where you're having to just eat constantly for months and months and months and just do hypertrophy training.
It's a grind. It's an absolute grind. But that's the thing. Like, you look at some of the guys doing CrossFit now, and even yourself and the way that you train, like, that's a very, you know, you keep conditioned, you keep good symmetry. You know, your body is a performance machine. You know, you run, you know, low levels of body fat. It's what is very alpha. And like that kind of CrossFit-y functional fitness look where you're not just looking good, you're actually performing. I think in today's kind of modern sort of world, I think that's a much more attractive proposition. Somebody that can play sport, can, you know, go to a Spartan race, can do turf games, but can still look great on a beach. I think you're ticking a lot more boxes with that sort of style of training and quality of life than if necessarily you're just living in a weights room, smashing 15,000 calories a day.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. You and I have definitely spent certain portions of our lives just doing hypertrophy.
Most of it. It's only when you get a bit older and a bit wiser that you decide that getting jacked all the time is not actually that good for you.
No, exactly. But I think it is a bit of a process. I think it is like a journey we all kind of have to go on. And it's what I see a lot of people do is that they come in and the first initial like motivation generally is I either want to lose weight or I want to put on muscle mass. Like, yeah, they're the two things. It's an aesthetic thing. Most people come in with an aesthetic motivation and that is what drives them. And it's completely okay to have that motivation. It's what got me consistently into the gym to develop a lot of the muscle mass, which now helps me to do all of the other stuff as well. And that's okay. But I think that generally that then over time starts to shift and change actually, because then you start to see what your body is capable of and you start to see how you don't just have to be training for aesthetic, but you can also be like, oh, well, I actually like getting stronger. Yeah. I like getting fitter and I like feeling capable. And then your motivation goes, actually, instead of getting big, I actually kind of want to get like fit just because I want to feel good.
I think that's a transition that happens a lot as people get older and as their training age kind of increases. So I think the more time you spend in the gym, it's almost like the law of diminishing returns, as in those newbie gains that you get when you first go, where you can put on 5 or 6 kilos in a year of good quality muscle. As those, you know, as that training age increases and those results almost get less and less and less over time, you know, you still have to work as hard, but you're not getting as much progress back. So I think it's only natural for you to try and navigate in a way where once you're in shape, it's much easier to maintain. So if you put in the groundwork and get past that newbie gain stage, it's only natural for you then to start to look at areas where you can make quick and sort of steady progress, like in fitness, like in strength, and still retain that element of aesthetics that you built up over, you know, a good couple of years laying the foundation. So I think that's perfectly normal and perfectly natural too.
Yeah, I think so. And actually, like you just said, it's like foundations. The way I kind of see it is like as an athlete, as an individual, as someone that wants to go through life and be physically capable, like your foundation should be strength and muscular capability. And then you build upon that all the other things. It could be power. It could be aerobic conditioning. It could be metabolic conditioning. It could be that like, in ultra endurance stuff, it could be flexibility, mobility, control, whatever, gymnastics.
What do you think your weak link is? So if I could say to you, in order for you to be a better athlete in the next 6 months, what area would you have to work on to really take it to the next level?
For me, it would be absolute strength.
Really?
That's nice. Be like resilience and absolute strength. Yeah. So like, you know, I'm strong enough. Like I'm strong enough for life, but I would like to be ridiculously strong.
what to you is ridiculously strong? What do you weigh?
I weigh about at the moment like 90 kilos, right?
So we weigh the same.
Okay. That's good. So this is good comparisons then. So I would say that to be ridiculously strong, you should be able to back squat twice body weight.
Yeah.
Right? So like 180 kilo back squat, yeah. I can't do that at the moment. I've had injuries and stuff. And my best I ever did was 165 kilos for three.
Yeah.
And that was after I was like a squat cycle. I was like, I wonder how much I can squat.
Yeah.
That was where I got to. But like I've been dealing with some back stuff and I haven't squatted in probably like 18 plus months.
Wow.
Doing like loads of single limb stuff. And so my strength is still kind of there, but not that absolute top strength. So for me, like getting up to a twice bodyweight back squat, 2.5 bodyweight deadlift, like those are kind of numbers where I'm like, that like you're strong.
So this is super interesting. So I don't know if you've been following any of the stuff that I've been doing, but since February, I haven't done one single bit of bodybuilding. I've only been doing strength training.
Yeah.
So my whole goal for this year was to do a 3-plate bench, a 4-plate squat, and a 5-plate dead. So that's 140 kilo bench, a 180 squat, and a 220 deadlift. So that's kind of my end of year lofty ambitions.
The irony in your goal when I've literally just said that's what I would do, and you're like, I've been doing that.
No. Yeah, no, I'm just saying I'm nowhere near that. I'm nowhere near that. That's kind of where I want to end up at the end of the year. So I'm probably 6 months into my 12 months of strength training. So I'm probably over where I should be in terms of bench. I'm probably on target for my squat, but I'm definitely under on my deadlift. So there's going to be some gritty months ahead.
Do you think that the reason that you are that way inclined is because your training history is that hamstrings aren't quite as important as quads when it comes to men's physique?
No, it's not that at all. It's that any leg training is not as important as any upper body training. Like the fact that I've already pretty much got 140 kilo bench press and I haven't got 180 kilo squat is a disgrace. But it's one of those ones where if I'm brutally honest, when I was competing, I trained legs, but I didn't really enjoy it. I did it because I had to step on stage in a pair of hot pants. And if I didn't train my legs, I wouldn't win. So I used to train it because I had to train it, not because I loved it. But when I went into the gym on chest day or arm day or back day, I loved it. Do you know what I mean? That kind of feeling where you're just pumped and feeling strong and, you know, You just feel like you're on top of the world kind of stuff. I never really got that from leg day. If ever I was training legs, if I was training to the level where I need to train to, I'd feel sick. So it wasn't a natural good feedback response for me. So I almost just shied away from really hammering my legs.
Mate, I completely resonate with everything you just said. Legs for me was only a thing that I would train initially for rugby.
Yeah.
That was why I got into squatting and deadlifting was rugby. And then It was like the feeling you get when you go in and you do a massive chest session or some shoulders or back or arms or whatever, and you're like, you feel pumped and you're like, yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
And then you do a similarly intense leg session, like you said, you feel sick. And so the feedback loop is pretty terrible. And also there's not quite the aesthetic positive feedback loop.
Yeah.
I don't find either.
100% not. Like there's a reason why there are loads of mirrors in the upper body section and there are like no mirrors in the leg section. Cause yeah, it's you don't get that same immediate like, damn, I look good in the mirror. Like yeah. this session is paying dividends. I can see this session working. When you're training yeah. legs, like you just try not to vomit. So,
yeah.
But to be fair, it's one of those ones which I wish that I had taken. If I could go back and speak to myself 10 years ago, I wish I had, I would say the year that I'm taking out now to develop my strength, I wish I'd done it 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I guarantee I would have a infinitely better physique.
Yeah. Strength is the fundamental physiological capacity of your muscles. So everything is built upon strength.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, like, you know, since doing more functional fitness, since my mentality has switched away from aesthetics and more towards being the best human,
yeah. right?
So like my thought process now is when I train is I want my physical body to be capable of moving my mind, my consciousness, whatever it is, through this planet uninhibited for as long as possible.
Yeah. Right?
Like I don't want to be some frail old man that can't walk upstairs. And so because of that, I'm like, well, I want to train legs. Every time I go to the gym, like I train legs way more than I ever used to
yeah.
because I now see them as such a fundamental part of what carries me through the world. And, you know, doing loads of like back exercises, but not like lats and traps. I'm
yeah.
talking like lower back, you know, stuff to strengthen the muscles along my spine so that yeah. that's stable and supported. And like that shifting mindset from an aesthetic to a, I suppose, performance or functional.
That's a very grown up point of view. That's a very grown up position to take, isn't it? Yeah, it's one of those ones. I reckon the biggest mistake from a physique point of view was when I decided to do the Everest marathon, and I gave myself 3 months to train to run my first marathon, but I decided to do it at Mount Everest as a bit of a banter.
Well, hang on, wait. Before you go any further, can you elaborate on what that means to do a marathon up Everest? You weren't actually up Everest.
So yeah,
you're doing it in a chamber.
No, I actually went to Nepal. You actually go to Nepal.
Shut up.
Yeah, you actually go to Nepal and you sleep at Everest Base Camp, which is about 5,500 meters, and then you stay there for a couple of days to acclimatize, and then you literally race. And it's a world rated marathon. It's supposed to be the hardest marathon in the world because it's not an ultra, it's just a straight marathon, but it's 42 kilometers between 5,500 meters and about 3,600 meters, so super high, no oxygen. There's about 7 kilometers of up and down. The terrain is everything from ice fields to dirt tracks to it's horrific. But
mate, that sounds absolutely awful. Now, before you continue, I did a marathon earlier this year. I did a marathon, my first ever marathon. I trained like for a couple of months for it.
Yeah.
And I did it in 4 hours and 5 seconds, right? And I'm a relatively fit bloke.
Did that piss you off? Did that piss you off? 4 hours and 5 seconds? That would literally drive me mad.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would have done, but I kind of stopped a bunch of times to do loads of stuff. So it's not like, you know.
Did you stop the vlog?
No, I had a videographer there.
Okay, I would have been like, you dickhead. Like,
I stopped to change my headphones because they ran out of battery halfway through, so I had to change my headphones. And just a few other stops.
Yeah.
So it's not like I wasn't really pissed off. But my point was that I did that in Clapham, just around the common.
Yeah.
And it's like pretty flat. And I'm a relatively fit guy and it sucked. Okay. So
yeah.
Whatever time you give, I'm going to be thoroughly impressed. But I just wanted to give the people listening a bit of context for the rest of his story.
Okay, so the guy that, or the people that win this event, they're all like Sherpa, Nepalese sort of mountain runners, but they do it in about 4 hours and 30 minutes.
Wow.
So I did it in 9 hours.
Oh.
Yeah. It was, do you know, it wasn't actually that bad. Do you know what was really bad? I actually caught pneumonia on the trek up to Everest Base Camp. So I did it with pneumonia, which sucked because it was just, I was probably coughing my lungs up every 20 seconds. So the people that I was running with must have hated me because they would have just had some prick coughing behind them for 9 hours straight. Whereas, it was pretty grisly. It was a grim.
You ran a marathon. First and foremost, you ran a marathon.
Yeah.
Having not been an endurance athlete.
Yeah.
And then you chose to do it up a mountain with pneumonia. Mate.
Yeah, it was, I didn't really think it through properly, but I wanted to raise a load of money for charity. And it was one of those ones where it was a bit of banter with a friend of mine he's a runner and he decided to do it. And I said, who are you doing it with? And he said, no one. And I said, fuck it, I'll do it with you. And he was like, you're joking, right? And I was like, no, when is it? And he's like, 2-3 months. And I was like, okay, I'm in, let's go. Book the flights. So we booked the flights and did it.
Wow.
But he did it in about 7.5 hours. So he's a little bit better. He's pretty good.
Apart from the fact you were coughing your lungs up most of the time.
Yeah.
What was hard? Did you get sore joints? Like I got really sore knees and hips.
Honestly, no. Maybe because it took me 9 hours. So I obviously wasn't working that hard, but I expected to wake up the next day and not be able to move. Do you know what I mean? You know, you hear these stories of people that run a marathon, then can't walk for a week.
Yeah.
I woke up the next day and had nothing, like nothing. It wasn't even like I was very tired, but my joints and everything were fine. I think the worst part of the whole experience, and this is going to sound like a complete posh, privileged twat, was that... Like in the 2 weeks getting up to base camp. So it's a 2 week trek where you acclimatize. Like the food is not great, as in it's pretty basic and it's not very good. But also like the conditions which you're staying in, like it's, you know, you're sleeping in like freezing cold conditions. You're like, you're pissing in a hole in the ground. You know, there's no shower facilities. There's no like clean water. It's just pretty basic. Like to give you an example, like the last 3 nights when you're at Everest Base Camp, you're literally, it's minus 10 to 15 degrees in the shade. Like you go for a shit, you're shitting off the side of a cliff. Like it's just in like whipping minus 20 degrees. It's brutal. Then you go in your tent and the sun shines and it's plus 35 degrees. It's just the most uncomfortable place for a human. If I went to Mars, I would expect Mars to have similar conditions. and then they say, do you know what? When the starting gun goes, everybody is just so fucking happy to get off that mountain. They run down. They're literally sprinting off. So that's kind of the biggest thing.
When you said that it was like the worst thing you've ever done for your physique.
Yeah, because
you lose like a bunch of weight.
I lost 6 kilos. I lost 6 kilos in muscle mass because as soon as you go above, which as you'll know, that takes a long time to put on.
Oh my gosh.
But, So my weight stayed around 88, 90 kilos, but my muscle mass dropped by about 6 kilos and my fat mass increased quite substantially. But it's a massive swing. And it's one of those ones where anytime you go above 4,000 meters, your body just is hanging in there. It's trying to survive. So it's kind of like it says, oh, these 16-inch arms that you have, don't need them. Boom, gone. This 44-inch chest that you've crafted, don't need that. Off you go. So it's just like your body just is deregulating itself. You're like an engine just getting rid of cylinders by the day. I could just feel my body just withering away and it was not good. But also after Everest, I probably didn't train legs properly for about a year. I just couldn't be fucked. I couldn't be bothered.
It all comes down to motivation, doesn't it? It all comes down to that mindset that you have, and sometimes it comes and sometimes it goes. And one of the most common things that I get asked is, how do you stay motivated? What's your motivation? How are you constantly inspired to go to the gym and train and stuff? And I say to people, like, my motivation and your motivation will be completely different. Like, you've got to, you might find inspiration. Someone might inspire you to start, but you've got to tap into why it's important to you.
See, like, I'm a massive believer in that. I always say, find your why, or probably even more important is find your why not to do the things that you kind of are the easy route. Do you know what I mean? So, like, you know, when you're lying on the sofa and, you know, your missus grabs a bag of crisps or cracks open a beer and says, do you want one? You've got to find that reason why not to do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's almost as important as your reason to, like, why you go to the gym and train, because although they're probably the same sort of thing, it's having that in your head of, like, if I have that, what's the consequence of me having that? Because, you know, going into the gym and training, like, it's quite fun. So having a, you know, finding out your why about that is probably not as powerful, because it is quite enjoyable, or it can be quite enjoyable. Whereas saying no to something that you do enjoy, like a beer or a burger or something like that, has to be a bit more powerful. I don't know. I'm spitballing.
Well, I think, like, with for me at least, is when it's those kind of things, it is a combination of, what does this decision say about me as a person?
Right.
And how does that link to my beliefs and my values and stuff? And then now as well, it is on, like, how am I going to undo positive that I've done?
Yeah.
Because, like, I kind of feel like through decisions I've made in my life, I've accrued a certain amount of credit. Right. Think of it like a bank balance.
Yeah,
it's
like
I've built up a positive amount in my bank balance when it comes to health or, you know, body fat levels, for example. And I'm like, I can spend some of that money every now and then. Like, I had a couple of beers last night. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Because I've got a certain amount of credit that I can play with. But if I, you know, smash off a couple of beers every single night for a year, I'm going to chip away at that bank balance.
Fair.
And, you know, go and have a curry every weekend. And, like, again, you're going to chip away at it. So it's like, there's those two things. For me, it's what does this action say about me as a person, and does it link in with my beliefs and my values? And then also, am I chipping away at that positive bank balance? And like you kind of said earlier, when you're a newbie, when you're a novice, it's easy to accrue that positive bank balance.
Yeah.
And it gets much harder the longer that you've been playing the game. And so...
What were you like over lockdown? So what was your, if we're going to look at, maybe not training, because that was different for everyone, but what, in terms of your diet, what was your diet like over lockdown? Did you just let yourself go? Did you try and stay on track? You know, what did it look like for you?
Interesting. Well, I mean, all right. So I get Fresh Fitness food, right? So I live in London, and so Fresh Fitness food, for those guys that don't, no, it's basically a bespoke meal delivery service here within the M25 in London. And they deliver fresh meals to my house every single day, well, Monday to Friday, that meet a portion of my calories and macronutrient requirements. So I get 2,100 calories from each day, which is enough for three meals. And then I'll have another meal on top of that. So in lockdown, because I had that service, I was able to maintain. I didn't have to think, and this is one of the beauties of, like, as you go through your kind of journey, you start to do things, habits form, you make decisions, which then you don't have to keep making them. Like, I've decided to use Fresh Fitness food as my meal delivery service Monday to Friday, so therefore I don't have to think about that. So it's not a thought; it just is. It just comes to my house and I eat it. Therefore, I can stay on track relatively well. But, you know, obviously, I was not perfect. And, like, there was some days in lockdown when I was not feeling very positive at all.
Yeah.
You know, there were some days when I was like, this sucks. I haven't seen anyone. I haven't talked to anyone except my sister. And as much as I love her,
I need some other stimulation.
Exactly. And I'm there, like, I'm sat there with a Budweiser. and I'm like, you know, eating some pancakes. So like there was ups and there was downs. Some days I didn't even eat my Fresh Fitness suit and I ordered Deliveroo. Like it was ups and downs, but because I kind of had that decision that I'd already made in a good state of mind, kind of getting me through some of those days when I wasn't necessarily in the best state of mind, I was okay. How about you?
Similar sort of thing. I get pretty much exactly what you get. I get sort of three to four meals a day delivered. It's about similar sort of calories, 2,100, 2,200 calories a day. But because I'm in a bulking phase or I'm in a strength cycle, my aim is to always be in a surplus. So I kind of got into the habit of eating my Fresh Fitness food, and then we got into like Netflix and Amazon Prime and all the good stuff that was on the TV. And it was, so I would find myself just eating probably an extra 500 to 1,000 calories a day, just cruising, like on the sofa, chilling out with my wife, just kind of once the initial stress of lockdown had gone, just kind of settling into that routine, you know, 9 o'clock would come, our son would be in bed, we'd crack open a box set and I would eat a bag of crisps, smash some watermelon, maybe have a couple of beers. And before I knew it, I was the heaviest I've ever been. And it was kind of all right because I was the strongest that I'd ever been. So one hand kind of justified the other. I'd kind of written off. I'd kind of said, summer's cancelled. I don't need to be in shape. I just want to be strong. I just want to be strong. And so it kind of was all right because my lifestyle was good. I was training, you know, really almost every day, if not every other day in my own gym. So that was great. I was eating the majority of my food was super healthy, Fresh Fitness food. But then I would add on top that bonus calories. And I think over about a 6 week period, I put on about 5 or 6 kilos. And I think I had a photo shoot one day where I wore a t-shirt and I got the photos back and I just went, oh my God. And I just, and I looked at it and I was like, I can't even Photoshop that. Like that is that, like I looked big and I got on the scales and I was like, shit, it's probably time for me to stop now. And I was 95 kilos. And so I just said, okay, that's it. And then I booked a holiday in 7 weeks' time. And I said, this is it. This is the start of my cut. And then I overnight just stopped eating anything that wasn't in my Fresh Fitness food delivery.
And you know what? Those people are going to be like, how'd you do that?
Well, it was just like, I was slightly horrified at myself in that I was kind of like, geez, I was 95, 96 kilos. And I'm like, I've never been that heavy. I don't need to be that heavy. What's going to motivate me? And I thought booking a holiday, because now that lockdown kind of eased, I thought we do want to go away. We do want to go away and have a family holiday. And, you know, obviously we do a lot of Instagram. We do a lot of social media. It pays to be in shape in better shape. And certainly I would feel more comfortable in my own skin if I wasn't 96 kilos and in my eyes overweight. And so I literally just made the decision overnight, the Fresh Fitness food is enough. And I was hungry for maybe 2 weeks and then your body just kind of adapts. And I went down from 96 kilos to 90 kilos in about three, 4 weeks. So
I was quite aggressive, like fat loss.
Yeah. But I kept strength training and my strength didn't dip. So like my strength training kept going in the right direction and my body recomped so quickly. And I think it was because I hadn't been in a calorie deficit for probably 6 months for the first time in 5 years. Mm. And I think my body just kind of said, okay, you're going to grow some muscle back, put on a load of muscle, getting stronger. And then when I decided to take the calories out, the muscle just burnt away the fat. So I think it was a very, very positive sort of 6 month, I don't want to call it a bulk, but a 6 month strength phase in a calorie surplus.
Yeah. Well, I think as well, you know, with someone like yourself who has done cuts and bulks, you've been through it in the past. I find that, and you know, the first time I dieted, it was much harder than the next. Like it's like it gets easier because all the fine details of like the tricks and tips to make it easier on yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you know them all. And like, you're like, well, I can do this. I've done it in the past. I can do it again. It's not a question. I've just got to do all the things that I've done. And then the result will happen. Whereas a lot of people, they're kind of like, I think it's the uncertainty a lot of the time. They're like, no, I've always been overweight. Therefore, is this even going to work? There's like, the first time they try and go into a cut, it can be nerve wracking because they've never done it before.
But that's the thing. I think, as you're right, when you've been through that cycle and that kind of that process, you end up trusting the process. And it's not necessarily just a personal thing. You know, we've worked with hundreds of clients in the last 10, 15 years. So we know that if you trust the process and if you follow the steps, and they don't have to be groundbreaking steps. It can be a small but significant calorie deficit. Get your work rate up in the gym. Follow a progressive resistance program. If you do this process, it will bring you these results. It is a refined science and a refined process that we've built a business on it, whether it's with our own physiques or with that of our clients. And we trust it. And I think a lot of people that necessarily haven't gone through that process or haven't been as sort of involved in that process, they don't get it. And they don't appreciate how simple it can be to just make those changes and follow and trust that process.
Yeah. I say a lot of the time that it is simple, but it's not always easy.
Oh, it's 100%. It's simple, but it can be the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah.
It can be so difficult. It's like
your mind gets in the way a lot of the time. And if you're, because these results can take time and like things can derail you that you didn't realize could derail you, then you can be like, oh, I don't get it. Like, I've been doing it for a week now. I should see it, like an instantaneous result. It's like that. You want the, I've done the thing. I want the result now. Like, I want to see this tangible reward, that positive feedback loop that you get from getting a sick pump in your chest. You're like, yeah, this is going to work. I'm seeing what I'm going to look like in like 3 weeks right now.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't necessarily get that when you like go into a cut for the first time. So like the first couple of weeks, or, you know, 3-4 weeks might not be super rewarding.
No.
And you're like, I don't get it. You know,
I think from a coaching point of view, obviously we've coached people for quite a long time, and it is, I think a lot of the successful coaches out there, it is nearly always about managing the client's expectations and getting them to think in a slightly more longer term way. As in, for me, with a lot of the changes that we make, I only will ever make one or two changes to somebody's routine in a 14 to 21 day period. And it's kind of like, bed these changes in, see what happens, then potentially add in one more, another 2 to 3 weeks, see what happens. And by then they're 6 weeks in and they may have only made three changes, but chances are those changes will start to bring about that drop in the scale weight, drop in the body fat, increase in the energy level, that sort of stuff. And it's about just managing that process so that people don't think in days, they think in weeks. You know, how many days is it going to take for me to lose this much fat? We're like, you want to be thinking more long term than that. And I think that's a lot of the responsibility of a coach.
Yeah, I agree with you, mate. And like there's some people which you could go, here is all of the things, like you could say to someone, these are all of the things that I do. Yeah. I do this many training sessions. I do this much cardio. I do this many steps. I eat like this. I sleep like this. I drink water like this. This is my program, right? And I could do all of these things for your unique situation. Some people will be able to go, okay, yes, I will do all of that and I will do it excellently. And they will get dramatic results and their body composition will be completely different in 3 months' time.
Yeah.
But then you could do that exact same thing for someone else and it completely overwhelms them and it is completely the wrong approach. And they'll try it for 3 days and be like, fuck this.
Yeah.
This is way too difficult. I am going back to whatever it is I used to do because that is where I'm comfortable at. So most people just don't have the capacity. They don't have the lifestyle capacity to make such big changes in a small space of time. Like you have been, and I have been doing this for years. So for us to shift certain things and go from a bulk into a cut overnight, isn't that dramatic? Because a lot of the lifestyle things that can make it difficult are already set up.
Yeah, we already go to the gym 4 to 5 times a week. We already get, you know, we bought into the idea of meal prepping and how important it is to eat food, which is calorie driven and macro driven. Like that's ingrained in our psyche. That's almost a non-negotiable for us. So everything else is just the bonus. Trying to get people to just eat the right food and go to the gym is the battle for most trainers. Whereas, you know, for us, that's kind of like the number one habit that we have. So I can 100% see why people struggle with trying to make those changes, but it's, so most of our clients that do make those changes, they really reap the rewards of that positive lifestyle change.
Yeah, man, definitely. And one thing I kind of mentioned in your extensive bio at the start was that you own City Athletic in London.
Yeah.
How have you been? Corona's been pretty mental for a lot of different reasons. You know, your gym's in central London. There's not as much footfall there. How have you been finding this situation, and how's it affected your business?
Honestly, mate, it's been very brutal. So we have two. So we have a site in Bank, so between Bank and St. Paul's, so right in the heart of the financial district, so very, very corporate. And then we have a brand new club in Victoria, sort of still very corporate, but slightly more residential, but not really. We basically took all of the profits and a big cash reserve from our first club, which we'd had for 7 years, and built the second club. We just got it to a point where we were just under a year old, and then the pandemic hit. So our second, we kind of used up all of our money on building the second club, had just got it to a point where it was starting to become profitable again. And then the pandemic hit and it just wiped us out. So it's been a really scary time, because whilst we were closed, it was fine because there is government support. You know, we managed to furlough a lot of our staff. There was rent holidays and rates holidays and tax breaks and stuff that we could take advantage of to kind of tide us over while we were closed. So there was this big, you know, we were sitting okay, and we were saying, okay, this might be all right. When we reopen, I can't wait. It's going to be like a second January. Everybody's going to rush back to the gym and it's going to be great. And it just hasn't come. So people just aren't back to work. Like, so we, of our guys that are still working from home, that's 70% of our members. It's huge. So, it's a worry. And I think a lot of fitness businesses, especially in central London, I think a lot of studios, a lot of, small independent gyms are going to really, really find the lack of footfall incredibly challenging.
Yeah. I was up in central London the other day, and the areas that your gyms are in are very central locations, especially the one by Bank and St. Paul's, like that is, like you said, heart of financial district, and it is like a fucking ghost town.
Yeah,
no one is there.
Yeah,
it's so weird. You know, it's like if you guys have seen the film 28 Days Later, right? It's a zombie film, and it's a pretty good one actually.
Yes, not bad.
It scared the shit out of me. when I watched it the first time, it really did scare the shit out of me. Because the zombies aren't like really slow and ploddy. They've got this thing called the rage virus, and it they're super fast and like proper scatty, and they just like sprint everywhere, and it really shook me. But and the reason I'm bringing it up is because in like the opening sequence of the film, the main character walks through central London and there's no one there. And it's like this post-apocalyptic wasteland, and that is what central London's like at the moment.
It's not quite that bad. So like there are a few shops open, like Starbucks is open again and Preps are open, and there's a few people. I'd say office capacity is probably at around 20% probably. So it's starting to sneak up a little bit more. I think to give you an idea, where on a usual day in one of our clubs, we would probably get about 200 people swipe in. So anywhere from 150 to 200 people swipe in. At the moment, we're getting anywhere from 10 to 15.
Wow.
So it is empty. It's just people just aren't back at work, and if they are, some aren't feeling comfortable enough to come to the gym. And from a gym owner's point of view, we've done everything we can in terms of, we've installed screens around the equipment. We've massively ramped up the antiviral cleaning. We do temperature checks. You know, people have to wear masks when they enter the building. You know, there's just a lot of things that we've done to try and make the environment as safe as possible. But some people are still just, you know, a little bit apprehensive about coming back on public transport and going into indoor spaces where there are other people. And, you know, and that's their own prerogative to do that. But from, you know, a sad story was there's a sandwich shop that most of the guys at work go and get their sandwich from, and they've been there like 25 years and they're closing at the end of this month because they just haven't got the business. There's just no one there. So, you know, business that was, you know, there for 25 years, successful for 25 years, is shutting at the end of at the end of this month. So I think,
and I guess is that because they're technically open, but there's just not getting enough day-to-day traffic.
Well, yeah, so like if you need
got the same expenses, but
correct,
not the same income.
Yeah, if you're paying the same rent, rate, service charge, staff costs, all that sort of stuff, and if you know, for a sandwich shop, if you need to sell 100 sandwiches to cover your costs. And usually you sell 150, so you're fine. But now you're selling 50. Do you know what I mean? You're going to be burning money every day you open. And it's you know, it's a sad place. And there's only so long that businesses can go on like that.
And like, what does the future look like for City Athletic in central London? How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, we're pretty confident that things will come back. So, you know, we can't see that central London is going to be like this for too long. I think businesses will be incentivized to bring their people back to work. I think as soon as there's a vaccine, people will be a lot more comfortable to come back central. So it's all about how we can stay dynamic, how we can be proactive in making us a really attractive proposition for people that are in town. Marketing ourselves, you know, we've had to change the way we market. We're doing a lot more SEO and Google AdWords stuff. You know, even things like ClassPass, which you've never done before, we're now, because we're so quiet, we're saying, let's get it out on ClassPass just to try and get bums on seats in the gym. It's one of those things where I think the landscape for fitness in general will be changed forever. Because of COVID-19. And it's one of those things where I think a lot of gym businesses will have to evolve, and you know, the ones that aren't so resilient might fall by the wayside. And it's a real shame. But at the moment, with the amount of people that are in central London, I don't think there's enough people to support all of the gym and fitness businesses. So some will have to close, and hopefully we're not one of the ones that close first. So hopefully that someone else will close first, and then we can take some of their members and some of their trainers and some of their clients and make us a little bit stronger. And then hopefully that allows us to stay open a bit longer, and, you know, someone else will go. And it's a little bit of survival of the fittest, and it's a horrible way to look at it. But, you know, from our business point of view, we're, you know, it's trying to cling on for as long as possible and still keep our brand as strong as possible and keep our members as happy and as safe as possible, really.
Of course, man. It's a war of attrition almost.
Yeah. But it's great because at the moment, like, I'm still, you know, the gym's super quiet, so I could get an hour and a half training session in and not be disturbed. It's brilliant. My strength gains are going to continue till the end of the year. Every cloud, David Birtwistle, has a silver lining.
Mate, and that is a fantastic way of looking at it. And on that wonderfully positive note, I think let's wrap things up today, because we have touched on some really great stuff, and it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today, Sean.
So, thank you, my dude. Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Dude, you're so welcome. Tell the people where they can find you.
So if you want to find me predominantly on Instagram, it's really simple. It's just my name. It's Sean Stafford. So S-H-A-U-N-S-T-A-F-F-O-R-D. If you want to go on Facebook, it's Sean Stafford Fitness. And that's pretty much where you can find me. That's it.
Well, is the City Athletic one at City Athletic?
Yeah, City Athletic one is at City Athletic on Instagram and City Athletic on Facebook too.
Amazing. There you go, team. You know, when you're in central London, go check it out. Your gyms are really great. They're fantastic facilities.
I think they're the best gyms in London. And at the moment, and at the moment, they're really quiet. So come on down.
If you ever wanted a prime central London training facility with top equipment and fantastic people, that's not got very many people in it, then this is the time and that's the place to go to. So, Sean, thanks so much for your time today, man. Really appreciate
it. No problem, buddy.
I'll catch you soon.
Take care, buddy. Thanks for listening, everyone.